Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Peter Zane from Real Clear Investigations coming up at the bottom of the hour. I have an audio cut of the day. Speaking of cut of the day and audio, let me preview this just a little bit. I haven't even heard this. They have a sit-down with Sean Hannity tonight on Fox. Trump is sitting down for his first one-on-one, and they have released this clip. I think it's about pardons, but not the J6 pardons, the Joe Biden pardons.
Joe Biden ran and said he would never do preemptive pardons. It was an issue that came up when you were leaving your first time.
Oh, he thought, he heard that I was going to do it. I didn't want to do it. I was given the option. They said, sir, would you like to pardon everybody, including yourself? I said, I'm not going to pardon anybody. We didn't do anything wrong.
I always love it when he starts doing the sir thing. Sir, that's a regular thing. Anyway, that's just a short clip that they've released from Fox, and the president will sit down with Sean Hannity. It's obviously been recorded already. You'll hear it tonight. It'll air tonight on Fox. So I was off on Friday and Monday, but I was spending a fair amount of time, and we had some help from Jessica Costas-Q on the CNN defamation trial, and I'm fascinated by it. I was so rooting for, you know, the jury to come in the correct way on this, and they did. Nick Fontecchio's with us, associate editor for the Media Research Center Newsbusters. He was in that courtroom every day. Nick, you were doing an excellent job. I was following you, covering that trial each and every day, and it was very helpful. And I do feel like it's an uncovered story in the country because of the news cycle, so I wanted to shed a little highlight on it this afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me on, and thanks for the kind words for all my reporting there. Yeah, so it was definitely a story that got sort of swept up in all the other big stories that were going on with the confirmation hearings,
the fires,
inauguration.
Yeah, everything. Yeah. But let's go back to the beginning, and then I do have some questions about how this all resolved, because it kind of happened quickly when, you know, the settlement came out. But this all goes back to November 11th, 2021. Can you give the listeners just a little background on what happened with Zachary Taylor here? Mm-hmm. Zachary Young, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically Mr. Young was getting people out of Afghanistan. He was working with corporately sponsored Afghans. CNN got a word from a quote-unquote activist who had confronted Young in his messages and was accusing him of being a mercenary and pocketing millions and stuff like that. And they sort of tipped, a couple of their reporters got tipped off to Mr. Young, and they sort of tried to apply their own morals to him and said, oh, it is wrong for a security contractor to make money and sort of use his network to help people get out of the country and pay the people who are in the country and pay for all this stuff, even though the nonprofits were paying the exact same expenses. And then they sort of questioned him for a little bit. They thought it was suspicious that he didn't want to talk to them, to quote Alex Marquardt, one of the writers on this. And then they suggested in their report that he was running a black market and he was basically like a human trafficker and like a criminal war profiteer.
So when this all gets, you know, and I was following your coverage, is it my imagination or were the attorneys, and I think the guy's name was David Axelrod, ironically, for CNN, just doing a terrible job in this?
Yeah, David Axelrod was doing a pretty horrendous job, I think, in my non-legal opinion, because basically at one point during his closing arguments, he had to go to the jury and be like, I know I have been annoying and I have done some things during this trial. Do not take it out on my client. If a lawyer has to say that, they're not in a good position.
Well, in one point, I want you to kind of recount this, because this goes back a couple weeks ago before the final week and the jury got the case. But the judge actually forced that attorney to apologize to the jury for misleading them, didn't he?
Yeah, he basically so he not directly to the jury, but he made him Axelrod apologize to Mr. Young for calling him a liar, with claiming he wasn't meeting his discovery and retention of documents obligations. When CNN had this document, they knew he didn't have it. And they kept calling him a liar, saying, sort of suggesting that this document proved that he was getting work when it was only just a contract for a company that holds security clearances, not gives out work. So basically, this was not done in front of the jury. A lot of this stuff wasn't done in front of the jury, but basically forced him to apologize. Mr. Young, for obvious reasons, didn't accept it.
So did Jake Tapper actually testify at this trial, or was he on with a deposition or not?
Yeah, what I was showing images of was his deposition testimony, which was played to the jury because they were sort of on a tight time schedule. So instead of bringing everybody in, for a lot of the CNN editors and for Jake Tapper in particular, they played them their sworn deposition testimony.
So, Nick, I was looking for this audio, and we might be able to find it before I wrap this question to you. But there was a deposition by one. I'll describe him as a snot-nosed producer for CNN. And they had the text messages where the kid basically said he wanted to punch, maybe I'm paraphrasing, maybe I'm pretty close to an exact quote here, punch, you know, the kid in the face, Zachary Young. So he testifies during the deposition. He's got to admit that. They have it on the text messages. And he's just so smarmy, and he laughs about it. And he doesn't even take it seriously.
Yeah, he said that Zachary Young had a punchable face. I believe it was in conversations with Marquardt. And Marquardt, I can't remember the words right
here,
up
you know what,
my
Nick,
head, but basically
it.
Gave him... Oh, okay.
I found it. Yeah, I found it. Thanks to my producer, Ethan. So here we go.
There's a photograph on the screen. Do you understand that to be Zachary Young?
I understand that to be Zachary Young.
Do you think he has a punchable face?
Yeah.
So why do you think that?
Probably the smirk and the sunglasses.
Did you want to nail Zachary Young?
No. I wanted to tell the story.
Do people at CNN frequently refer to the subjects of stories as mother?
I can't speak for all of CNN.
So that goes on for a little while. But my impression when I saw you tweeting that out is, man, if I'm on the jury, I think that CNN is automatically guilty because this guy's not even taking this seriously.
Exactly. That was one of the special things about the jury system in Florida, that they're actually able to ask questions to witnesses. So the witnesses that are appearing on the stand after basically the direct examination, cross, and all that, they get to ask their own questions of the witnesses. They write them down, handwritten, and then they hand it to the judge, and then the counsels and the judge sort of look them over to make sure there's nothing in there that can't be talked about. And what you were able to get from a lot of these questions was very, like, in stuff like that, where it's their question of, like, CNN's motives, and they ask them, like, are you sorry? Do you think your apology that the CNN ran was disingenuous? And basically, for most of it, you were able to see that their questions were very not happy with the way CNN runs their news gathering operation. And it's the CNN is basically having to face the public now, giving them their opinions about how against and how, like, sort of underhanded their news gathering is. They even questions like, do you believe people have an obligation to talk to CNN? And they question them, and time again, CNN's own reporters that were on the stand said, we're not sorry. We don't think our company should have apologized. We would do it again. We stand by the report. And then the jury obviously thinks, okay, like, you're not sorry, so that's no remorse. So you committed defamation, actual malice, and you should be punished punitively.
I was shocked. So then kind of take me back to last Thursday, because the jury comes in and against CNN, but then the punitive damages aren't settled, and then they go into a settlement because they're freaked out about how big the check's going to be. Is that basically what happens?
Yeah, so basically what happens with that is, like, Friday morning, like, so the it seemed like by their notes that they gave to the judge, they were sort of ready on the defamation stuff the previous night, but they can't announce everything like piece by piece, so they have to wait for them to come back in. Friday morning, they come in a couple hours later. We have a verdict on the phase one defamation question, mm-hmm. and then that is the compensative damages. $5 million total, $4 million for economic, $1 million for emotional. There was definitely a lot of hope and speculation that hopefully those numbers would have been higher, but because the way the state of Florida works is that there is a cap was removed on a total large figure, but because of the way the legal system there is, it was sort of the there's a 10 times multiplier on those compensatory damages, which means the maximum that he could have received, Mr. Young, was $50 million.
But do we have any idea of what it was? Probably an NDA at this point, and he gets his money.
Yeah, that was part of the settlement, was that they couldn't talk about what the settlement number was. But it was likely a few million. I've seen some reports, some estimates from like outlets like Puck, who were more on CNN's side, was estimating it maybe at somewhere in the middle at 25 million. But I've pushed my sources on what the number could be, and they're not speaking.
I think 25 probably would be a realistic number, and I hope it was that high. And then let's juxtapose that with what Jim Acosta told a member of Congress when he was lecturing him about J6 today.
This is not Fox, Congressman. You can't just spin a tail and pull the wool over people's eyes.
Yeah.
This is CNN. This is the news. We're asking you to come on and tell the truth.
And that's why more people are watching the Cartoon Network SpongeBob reruns right now, Jim.
Oh, had you heard that, Nick? That was a great line by Congressman Burkett.
I saw the quotes going around today, and it's absolutely true that they're losing out on market share. That was part of the argument that they were sort of making at the beginning of punitive damages before the settlement came out, was just like, the news media is in a bad place right now when our market share isn't that good, basically going to like, well, we're like, be careful, you might put us in the poorhouse. But just going to Acosta's claims here of like, we're CNN. It was like, yeah, you're CNN, the adjudicated defamers. You guys have just been incredibly found defamers.
Well, not only that, but let's face it. There were so many similarities to this, I think, in Covington Catholic and Nick Salmon. They had to cut him a check as well. And even the audio that I just played from the CNN snot-nosed producer just kind of reminds me of the behavior back then. But, you know, they did that to Nick, and it was all based on that moment on a Saturday morning when he was surrounded and he had a look on his face, right? Because they decided they didn't like the look on his face, and the rest of the legacy media, they went after that kid.
Oh, absolutely. This is, they've talked themselves up since 2016 that they are like the defenders of the country. They're the defenders of humanity, the world order, where they're going to be the ones to speak truth to power when they're basically just bullies, right? Where they're just like, oh, he's got a face, let's make fun of his face. And just go off of like these baser gut instincts that are completely wrong. And like, They're not going to change their opinion no matter what the facts are showing them. That's basically what the jury questioned Marquardt about, being like, why were you still pushing when everything that you were coming up with was proving your theory wrong? And he just sort of stood by it. And he's like, oh, there was still enough there for me to believe what I believed, when it wasn't the case at all that he was like a human trafficker or that he was ripping anybody off.
Well, again, Nick, you did great work. My only, you know, disappointment is that this did not get more coverage. And again, I just think it was supply mm-hmm. and demand with what was going on. But I was glad personally that you were there every day. We talked about it quite a bit on this show, and I'm glad the resolution ended up the way that it was. We'll see if any lessons are learned by our friends at CNN. I'm guessing not.
Yeah, so far it does not seem like that, especially with what he was saying, the way that even Jake Tapper has sort of been conducting himself there. And they're not, like, CNN is supposed to be facts first. These are the facts. Jake Tapper, Katie Bo Lillis, Alex Marquardt are all adjudicated defamers. They defamed a man. That is a fact. Facts first, CNN.
Nick, great work here. Thank you so much for helping me out in telling the story as well. And we'll talk again.
Thanks for helping me get the story out there.
Right, that's awesome. Nick Fontecchio did a great job with the Newsbusters team. He was tweeting it out from the courtroom every single day. It was an important case, and I'll see if there's any repercussions moving in the future. We're going to talk to Peter Zane in a couple of minutes. And Peter, I love Peter because he's a thinking politician, not politician, but thinking pundit when it comes to politics. But we're going to talk about Trump derangement syndrome and whether or not that is getting worse or it's getting better. And so I'll use a little example here. And, you know, I wasn't here on Monday, but I talked yesterday about Elon Musk and the so-called Nazi salute. The bottom line at this point is if you hate Trump, if you have Trump derangement syndrome, if you're certainly on the maybe the extreme left, but maybe even on the further middle part of the spectrum, you don't like Trump. You think that this was a Nazi salute, right? If you're on the other side, you don't think it was a Nazi salute. For me, the only thing that I'm really interested in is what's the truth, right? And the truth is that we've got so many different people from AOC to Taylor Swift to Kamala Harris to Hillary Clinton to Barack Obama doing exactly the same thing where they're putting their arm out and it looks like a Nazi salute. Now, I'm going to read something to you, and you actually know who this person is as well. I'm not going to identify who the person is. It's a friend of mine. I love this friend. I really do. We do not agree on politics. And I've told you I've kind of avoided the Facebook recently, right? Mm-hmm. I put the bunny pictures up there. By the way, you can still follow Oreo Smario the Bunny on Instagram. I posted a couple of pictures today. But this person, and I go on Facebook in the morning usually to see birthdays, you know, because they put birthdays and then sometimes memories and stuff like that. But I noticed this, and I just wanted to get reaction. And this is going to kind of walk us into the conversation with Peter, I think. Anyone trying to convince others that Elon Musk didn't make a blatant Nazi salute yesterday are the kind of people who stand in front of fire saying everything is okay. It's not. Freedom is burning. Don't be that person. It's a dumb stance. Lean into the horror with your bad self, but don't tell us it's not so bad. Glad I left that scorched earth place, formerly known as Twitter, when I did. All right. So one thing that I would say here on the Nazi salute thing is, let's say that it was, just for example, right? For argument's sake, let's say that that's what he was doing. Is he doing it because he believes in the supremacy of the white race, right? This is a guy that has helped try to get Israeli hostages out of Gaza.
Yep.
Right. He's helped with technology related to that particular conflict as well. He's on the spectrum. Brian talked about this earlier. If you've seen the video of Elon going out to the crowd, he looks like he's my daughter's age, acting all goofy and silly. I see Alexa do this, you know, on different occasions because she's in front of people and there's nervous energy. But Elon does that. He's awkward. You know, he's eccentric. This is how a lot of these rich folks are. But he's also a little bit on the spectrum. But what would the purpose be of the Nazi salute? So what is he supporting now all of a sudden after trying to go to bat to get, you know, hostages out of Gaza? He wants to put Jewish people in ovens. Are there other behaviors on the part of Elon Musk that make him look like he's a Nazi? What's fascinating to me about the people that insist there's no way, shape, or form that this was not a Nazi salute. Well, what was the purpose of it? What exactly was the purpose of it? That's what I don't understand.
Well, and they,
to show solidarity?
Since he came out and said himself, that's not what I was doing on X, and said himself, that's not what I was doing. Here's a bunch of... But they don't go farther than that. They don't go further and think it out. They just say, oh, it's a symbol of him showing power that he's now in charge and he's a Nazi. What?
Yeah. Well, right. So let's take it further. That's the baffling part of it. So what in the world do they think as a result of this is he doing that backs up the notion that he's nothing. A Nazi or a white supremacist? Yeah, nothing.
They don't go that far.
So I've got a really good Libs of TikTok one. I think Elon even retweeted this where you got AOC out there losing her, you know what, blah, 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 at some sort of rally, and she's waving her arms out there. So you can basically capture people in that pose for a variety of times. But he was reaching toward his heart. He was, you know, reaching. And by the way, even let's say there's some sinister motivation for him to do that. Why? What's the purpose of it? Oh, he just accidentally revealed that he's a Nazi. Now, this reminds me, it really does. Sue, and I'll bring it up. I didn't bring it up Monday. Maybe if I was here, I would have brought it up on Monday. But my friend Kevin Steincross, who used to work at Fox 2 on MLK Day morning, what was it, 7-8 years ago, he misspoke. And he was talking about, I don't even want to say the day of the holiday because maybe I miss it. And it sounded like he said something else.
Mm-hmm.
And he was removed from the air. He was removed from the air for being a racist. He's never been seen again. I've seen him, you know, in person.
Sure.
But he can't share what happened because he signed an NDA. And I hope he got a big check. He did nothing wrong. But it didn't matter because when you told people or you tried to explain to, I remember very similar to what I just read, there were posts on Facebook about this. Mm-hmm. People, African Americans, insisting that's just him revealing his stripes, right? This is a guy who I've argued probably was the least bigoted person in St. Louis media for a variety of reasons that I won't get into right now that are somewhat personal, but I'm just telling you. And he got his career ruined. He would go to Hollywood. You know, I used to do these junkets in Hollywood. I would get Kevin's sloppy seconds, if you will, because he was the guy here in St. Louis. And if he couldn't make a trip, then I was somehow sometimes invited. He was really good at what he did, and he had a great reputation in Hollywood. They had to cancel him from those because the people that work with the studios had to think to themselves, it's embarrassing, but this is what they did. Well, I can't put this person from St. Louis, who, by the way, has had interviews with Sandra Bullock and Brad Pitt, and you name it, A-lister after A-lister. But now, even though he didn't do a thing wrong, nothing wrong, he misspoke. It sounded like he said something else. There was no intent. Doesn't matter. The NAACP got involved, and the white progressives got involved, and they ran him off of his career in the media, and that's what happened. And he did nothing wrong.
Nope.
Nothing wrong. But this is what happens when they take on a life of their own, unfortunately. Trump derangement syndrome is very real, and Peter Zane's going to talk more about it coming up next. Audio cut of the day as well later on.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I've gotten Sue to react to some of my bumper music today. That's always a victory. When I played Somebody's Baby by Jackson Browne, I was a...
Ooh. Love it.
Sometimes you can hear that in the background. Yeah. I like that Jackson Browne song. A little Fleetwood Mac today as well. On the topic of music, I'm very excited. Our friend, you know what's funny about this is I saw a story in the New York Times a week ago, maybe a week and a half ago, and it was about aging roadies for rock stars and guitar techs and stuff like that. Huh. And I was going through my regular show prep, and I thought, you know what, I want to read that. So I clicked it, and I put it in my reading list. I didn't even, you know, see anything about it. A couple of days later, I had not read the story. I get a message from our friend Tim Summer, who writes at the Rock and Roll Globe. He wrote that story in the New York Times.
What?
He contributed, and it's it's pretty cool. You know, you have all these guys that are still out on the road, guys and gals, that are on the road doing music into their 70s, maybe even into their 80s, and they have people that have worked with them for decades. You know, guitar techs. There's a guy that works with Springsteen. Kevin Buell has been with him for maybe 50 years.
Jeez.
And Tim did a story on that. So he's going to join us. We'll talk a little music as we head into the weekend on Friday night. I just highlighted what I would say is a very strong case of Trump derangement syndrome with a friend of mine. I did not name the friend. I really do like him, but wow, there's some stuff on Facebook that I'm seeing that is pretty out there in the last couple of days. I thought maybe some people would let this go. I have a musician friend in San Diego that was full of TDS when I was really concerned about him. Sent him a message, tried to calm down. It didn't matter. I think he hates me now because I voted for Trump, but he's still out there. It's like every day, F Trump, F Trump. Peter Zane is with us, editor at Real Clear Investigations, wrote about Trump derangement syndrome from a bit of a different perspective, is with us tonight. Happy New Year, Peter. How are you?
Happy New Year. I'm doing well. I was just thinking that about a year ago, Missouri beat what was essentially the Ohio State team won the national championship.
Thank you for acknowledging that. We kind of pointed to that little nugget the past week as well. But, you know, we had a pretty good team this year, too. We just couldn't beat South Carolina, and I think that cost us a trip to the college football playoff. But you admitted in this piece, and, you know, if you go back, you take me back a little ways. I'm not always a fan of Trump. I've probably had a little TDS, but you admitted that you had a little case of TDS yourself, right?
You know, I found myself apologizing for him, not disagreeing with him, but and with my conservative friends often saying, geez, I wish we had somebody else, or gee, he's not presidential, or geez, you know, I wonder if he has the character to be president. And, you know, I started to take a step back, and I should have done this a long time ago, and said, how much of this is just me being worn down by all of the lies, all the propaganda? you know, that's brought up against this guy.
And I can relate with that, because that's something that, you know, I think we've all had to fight off against. And it's just gotten, you know, even in the last 48 hours, it's gotten crazy and even more unhinged. But I guess the question would be, and you addressed this a little bit in the piece, this is not going away, I don't think. It's not going to wear off, right? There's no vaccine for this either.
No. The people who are truly Trump haters are too infected. They're never going to change. That said, I will say that I am kind of surprised and relieved that we haven't seen violence from the super uber haters. You know, I thought that we would. So in fairness, I'm glad I was wrong about that. But the sort of lying about the news, lying about what he's doing, misrepresenting things. I mean, the Washington Post did a fact check of his inauguration, and I stopped reading after the first one because it said it was false, his claim that Biden had weaponized the Justice Department.
Oh, whatever, right?
I mean,
yeah.
You lost me right there. If you're going to do that, then you're just... But I guess the point I was trying to make is that I don't think Trump's perfect. I didn't think Ronald Reagan was perfect, and I'm best president of my lifetime. But what I did was I turned complaints into condemnation. And that's where I bought into the Trump derangement syndrome, that he was somehow beyond the pale in some way. He wasn't just an imperfect person like all the presidents were. That I guess I bought in the idea there was something a little wrong with him, and that's false. Because, in fact, he has tremendous character, and only somebody with that strength of character could have withstood the assaults against him, could have withstood the attacks, both verbal and physical, and persevered. I mean, he's truly an astonishing, imperfect person.
Peter, there's no way for me to argue against that, because we and I think a lot of people listening, I addressed this a little bit yesterday on the show. I was not here on Monday, but you know, if you go back certainly to 2016, I didn't think he could win electorally. I didn't like a lot of the character issues, the behavior. I wasn't a fan of January 6th, and I, like a lot of people, and you and I had conversations a couple of years ago, a lot of people were ready to move on. If it was Ron DeSantis or someone else that could be a standard bearer that could kind of manage the media in a similar way. But look, what we found out, and I think maybe we all knew this to begin with, there is nobody else that can do it the way that Trump does it. They're just not.
No. And I would say, you know, the next point is very interesting story today. Elon Musk criticized the AI announcement that Trump made yesterday. So on the one hand, it's a cult of personality. Everybody has to fall in line. Okay. But on the other hand, and he demands absolute loyalty. So anytime anybody agrees with the president, it's not because the president is right. It's because he demands loyalty. And so when I wrote this piece and just pointed out his character, then what people say is, well, you're just kissing the ring. It's like, no.
Yeah.
He actually is a... So everything gets turned into some sort of... Because they have psychosis. So they try to say that you have a psychosis. It's more projection. And it's like, no, I'm actually trying to come out of the mild psychosis that was deeply unfair to him. And I will say, one of the things I tried to say in the column was, you know, when his supporters agree, oh yeah, you know, there's something off about him, that then gives credence to the extreme haters on the other side who deeply oppose him, because they go, look, even his supporters don't like him. And that's why I think it's time to just, to the extent somebody honestly can, and there are a lot of people just honestly don't like him, but, you know, don't play the game, because it's not fair to Trump and it's not good for our country, because it makes it harder for him to do the things that need to be done.
But wouldn't you also say, because a lot of us were in the camp, there's people listening right now, there's people all over X, there's the Never Trumpers out there that turned maybe the most annoying of any crew, even the Democrats, but everyone would say, you know, if he would just kind of back off on the mean tweets, if it was, you know, just if he wouldn't insult people, if he wouldn't do, it was always the behavior stuff. I focused on that a lot, but I can't help but really kind of feel strongly that after all those years of hoping that there would be some change in behavior, I really think there has been a change in behavior, a change in tone. Just the way, maybe it's just because now he's won and he knows he can do things and there's not that it was really pressure. But I do sense that there's something different. Maybe it was the assassination attempt, Peter. I don't know.
Right. Well, but, you know, I would also suggest that when you take a look at him, how much weight should we give to those traits he has that we don't fully embrace, that don't make us feel comfortable? How much should that define the man? So I'm saying you can say, I wish he didn't do those treats. I wish he didn't occasionally use coarse language. I get it. But when you're weighing things, and I think this is where the derangement syndrome comes into place, I think I unwittingly was giving way more weight in my understanding of him, even though I supported him, but, you know, my understanding of him because of the propaganda that said those are the most important things about him. No, the most important things about him are the strength of character that he's shown and the common sense. I mean, that's, and really when you think about it, what we really bought into was a bunch of people making us or trying to make us focus on character traits because he was exposing their fraudulence. He was exposing how they had sold us out to China. He was exposing how the immigration policies had hurt working class Americans. He was standing up to these people and saying, you know what, we're not going to pay for Europe's defense anymore all by ourselves. So he exposed, and really what was the Biden administration but 4 years of just the ideology of the best and the brightest and how empty it is.
Absolutely.
That's what he exposed.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. Now, do you have any, because I did spend a little time yesterday and today, I do have some reservations with some of the pardons, the J6 pardons, but my difficulty there is so many of these cases are very nuanced. I know some of these people have been behind bars for several years. I understand that there were over-prosecutions, but any reservations there with what happened with the pardons, Peter?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. I think that some people, I think it was too far. But again, where I'd take a step back and say, you know, what he did, I don't agree with what he did. And I think it's important to criticize him where we disagree. But Biden just let out thousands of drug dealers, you know, and I know somebody whose son was sold a pill and it killed him because it had fentanyl in it. And the guy who sold him that pill went to jail. Okay, I don't know if he was released, but in other words, people who caused lots of death were just released by Joe Biden. And so my only point is Trump is not beyond the pale. He's an imperfect person. Politicians do things we disagree with all the time, sometimes for bad reasons. But somehow they have made an Overton window where anything he does is just unacceptable. And other politicians doing the same thing or worse, oh, well, that's just politics.
Yeah, they didn't mention it. Look, I'm listening last night. I didn't hear anything from Aaron Burnett on CNN talking all about all these pardons, but nothing about Leonard Peltier and, you know, the guy who killed FBI agents being pardoned by Biden. Right, exactly.
Two bullets directly in the skulls of people. I don't care how long you're in jail for. But anyway, so that was really, yes, I think that Trump, you know, I understand why he did it, but it was sweeping, it was too much, and there were some people there who really did bad things. And I would have much preferred that he, but you know, somebody else would make this point, and that is, as much as we're like, well, let's do it at a case-by-case basis, the J6 people were not treated on a case-by-case basis. The J6 people were all in a group, and every one of them hunted down. I mean, so they were treated collectively.
They were. No, I think that's true. Yeah, and that's why a lot of them, you know, have made the case. Look, we agreed to admit to things in misdemeanor pleadings that we really didn't even do because we didn't want felonies, we couldn't afford the lawyers, etc. Now, there were some bad actors in that, and that's where I'm concerned. I'm not concerned about the ones that were over-prosecuted, but I think some of them were prosecuted properly, and I'm not so sure they didn't get off too easy. Peter, great stuff. Always appreciate it. Happy New Year. We'll have you back soon.
Thank you.
All right, take care. I have audio cut of the day coming up, but I wanted to play this just because I thought this was interesting, and I just remembered it, Sue, and I have to remember who this guy is. But, you know, one of the questions, and there's a little buzz in Washington right now about what Trump might do when it comes to the wildfires. And by the way, and I haven't checked on this, we started the show this afternoon with another pretty big fire that busted out in the L.A. area north of Los Angeles, and it was a big one. It went from 50 acres to 100 to 500 to 5,000, like in just a matter of hours.
Yikes.
And it is really burning out of control this afternoon. And, you know, we've been tracking that. Now I was going to make a broader point. What the hell was I talking about just there? Because I was going to make a better, bigger point. This is one of those moments where as a radio host, I completely lost my train of thought. It'll have to come back to me. Oh, this is it. So this guy here, thank you, Sue, for helping me, even though you didn't.
Yes.
This guy is talking about how, now, whether there's something to this or not, Joe Pollack is his name, and he says he's got a little insight that the Trump team in Washington is thinking about California quite a bit right now.
As I was driving down Sunset Boulevard today, I noticed a group of cars parking. I thought it was a local or state official, but it turned out to be the advance team for the Trump White House. 24 hours after he took the oath of office, he is already planning a visit to Pacific Palisades and other areas that are affected by the wildfires. And I spoke to his advance team. You can see them there behind me. And I told them what they need to look at when they come to Pacific Palisades and what the issues are here. The lack of water pressure, the lack of leadership from the city, the traffic jam that happened on Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah, all those things. By the way, the I-5, there's a part of I-5 that is closed down in Los Angeles during rush hour this afternoon because of that new fire. But I thought this was interesting.
I'm confident that when they visit on Friday, they're going to talk to those of us who live here and who understand the issues and who understand that much more could have been done to save the Pacific Palisades.
I do think it's important that Trump gets out there and assesses that situation and shows leadership,
yeah.
And it sounds like he's going to do exactly that. Audio cut of the day is... All right, we just have a couple minutes left, so let me get right into audio cut of the day. I'll have to cut off Fee Wable here in the tubes.
The tubes are awesome.
I love that song, though.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Let me weave something here. I'm going to weave. Trump weaves. I'm going to try to weave something here this afternoon. This is the mayor of Philadelphia, Cheryl Parker, having some challenges spelling. She's got a football team heading to the NFC Championship this weekend, the Philadelphia Eagles.
Let me hear you all say E-L-G-F-E-S.
Oh, it wasn't E-A, dear. It was E-L. And that reminded me of this epic moment from Al Sharpton.
So in the words of my late friend Aretha Franklin, show some R-E-S-P-I-C-T.
Now he's, don't you love that? That's a cut from my show open.
Yeah.
From many show opens. Now he's in the news because he went off on some of this DEI stuff because Trump is crushing this diversity, equity, and inclusion stuff in the federal government and beyond.
Why do we have DEI? We had DI because you denied us diversity. You denied us equity.
What?
You denied us inclusion.
What?
DEI was a remedy to the racial institutional bigotry practiced in academia and in these corporations. Now you want to put us back in the back of the bus. We going to do the Dr. King Rosa Parks on you.
Let me tell you something, Al Sharpton. I would move you to the front of the bus in a heartbeat if you're qualified. That's what we're talking about right here. And then there's this. There is related Sunny Hostin on The View.
And thinking about that and Donald Trump saying things that this country would be a meritocracy, you're talking about a man who didn't become the president of the United States because of merit. He had no political experience whatsoever. He had no business experience. He was given everything that he has. He is a legacy hire. He is, if anything, a DEI hire, a didn't earn it hire.
I don't need to comment on that further than playing the audio because I think Sonny Hostin's idiocy sort of speaks for itself on this Wednesday evening. Sue, have a great night.
Too, Mark.
We'll be back tomorrow at 3.
Get more at 971talk.com.